Blog Hello? Talk Radio.
Hello. Hello, this is Joe Donovan, and welcome to the Daughters and Sons Hour, a weekly conversation we have to address issues of concern to persons who are the daughters and sons of parents with mental illness. Tonight, we are speaking with Joanne Riebschlager, and Dr. Riebschlager is an associate professor at Michigan State University and works in the area of social work, where she works with children of parents with mental illness, and has developed an education program to teach these young people about mental health and issues. And I'll introduce and I'll bring her on right now, and let's get this started. Hello.
I hear a beep.
Okay, you did find
wow,
it.
Wow, there you are.
Yes. I will be doing some editing after this.
Okay, no problem.
But as I mentioned, our guest tonight is Dr. Joanne Riebschlager, who is an associate professor of social work at the Michigan State University, where she works with families where an individual has a mental illness, and primarily has been focusing on supporting children in those families. And the title of our show here is Mental Health Literacy and Cockney Youth. And then we talk about we will also talk about a program that you've developed. Start off with what is Cockney?
Children of parents who have a mental illness. So children of parents is the COP, and then mental illness. So COPMI is a shortcut that they use. It came from Australia, as far as I know.
Okay. And, yeah, I just want to make sure that anyone who hadn't seen that term would understand it.
Right.
And, mental
yeah,
health,
it's not a common term. Yeah.
Yeah. Mental health literacy is another issue, I think, that you're the first one I've said who actually used those three terms, those words together that way. And I'd like to hear your ideas on what that is.
What that means, mental health literacy. It's the fancy talk for just knowing the facts about mental illness and recovery. That could include substance abuse as well. But just knowing the truth, the facts. A lot of people either don't know much about mental illness, on what they think they know may not be right. So the idea of mental health literacy is understanding the facts. So being literate about or knowing what it's about.
Okay. Well, how did you get involved or get interested in, I guess, working with these young people and helping to...
Well, it's kind of been a long journey. I grew up in a family where there was a lot of mental illness, so I was always a little more tuned into that, to the family kind of things. But then it was sort of vicarious. What happened was, what really launched this was I was working as a supervisor in a public mental health clinic. And we had a couple of kids running all over the lobby, a young man, maybe 9 or 10, and his younger sister was maybe 5. And she was a little wild, and he was trying to watch her. And their mother was in a room with one of my staff where they were working to try to get her to agree to a no-suicide contract. And she was pretty seriously intent on committing suicide. So we had to stay with her, and she did not have anybody to watch her kids. So because I was the supervisor and I also work with children, the office people said, somebody's got to watch these kids. You take them in there. So I sat in my office, and I thought, well, I wonder what they know about what's going on. And it's a long story, but the bottom line is they really did not have a clue what was going on. But when we came close to 5 o'clock, we didn't know what we were going to do with them or where we were going to take them. And this was before cell phones, so that was another factor. But whether we were going to have to call, you know, social services, which we didn't want to do. And so what happened was I asked the boy, I said, well, you know, when you're not with your mom, you know, who might watch you? Whose house do you go to? Or does somebody come over? I said, what happens? And so he takes this little wallet, it was like a child-sized wallet, and pulls out this little lined sheet of paper, and had all these great big scribbly names and phone numbers on it for emergency contacts. And I began to realize that this child knew, was living with, knowing he was going to have to be responsible for things, but they did not, neither child, including him, had any sense that his mother had a mental illness or that she was currently suicidal. And so I thought, well, no problem. I'll go and get one of those books for people that will explain mental illness to children and crises and recovery. And at that time, there weren't any, nothing. And so I thought, well, me being me, I'm like, well, I'll write one. And then as I started to think about what I would write, I'm like, well, how do I know what to put in it? So it became a journey of finding out what children who had a parent with mental illness as children and as adults and their parents and mental health and child welfare professionals. I talked to them all, including interviewed a lot of youth, and I asked them what do they need to know? What do they know, and how do they get their information, and how do they find things out? And essentially, they didn't know much. What they had heard was overheard from what other family members were saying, and or there was, in some cases, they were taken from their homes during crises and later on figured out things were going on. But what they basically said is, the bottom line is that the children needed information and they needed support, and it needed to be something that it was okay to talk about, because living with someone with mental illness is not an easy thing to do sometimes. And the only thing worse is having mental illness, which is really, you know, hard to do what you have to do. It, you know, especially being a parent, which you got to be on all the time, like that commercial, Dave, I've got to take a sick day. Well, dads don't get sick days. So that's my story. It launched me into doing what turned out to be research. We did write some materials, and we began to realize that there needed to be a structured way to teach kids about mental illness, because the other factor is that the children that I was talking to have a statistically higher chance of acquiring a mental illness, although the odds are still with them that they won't. It would be nice to, if they knew what to do should that occur, or even just managing the stress, which all children need to learn to do. So, and at that time, a lot of the kids said that they thought that the parents' symptom level was their fault, and they all had a story about why that was their fault, or many of them did. And so I thought there was another important message, is that mental illness isn't anybody's fault. So that was what I just condensed for you, was many years worth of work. But over the years, I've talked to a lot of people, and I became convinced that we had to get information to the kids And we needed to do that in a way that was interesting to them, and that was that they could receive information over time. And one of the things we did find in one of the, we had numerous studies, was that parents really don't tell their kids very much. And there's a lot of reasons for that. They don't know much themselves. It's not always a comfortable topic. They don't, some of them didn't want the kids to kind of use that against them if they had kind of teenagers who might do that. Or they just, they just had a lot of reasons, but, and there were a few who sat their kids down and said, well, here's how we talk to them, and here's what we did, and here's where we looked on the internet. But for the most part, the kids that I work with don't know anything more about mental illness than other kids of their same age, which has surprised me, but I found it true over and over again. So that was a long answer, I know, Joe.
Well, but it's very real. I grew up, with my mom, during my younger area age, there's definitely a lot of confusion on my part. I personally had a hard time trying to understand the difference between a symptom and a side effect of medication.
Sure.
Things like
sure.
that. That
and then one of the things that's kids. Yeah, go ahead.
But the next question I wanted to find out is to get an idea of numbers. You know, how many children are there?
It's millions. If there was a study done where they just took in, one of the problems with not having a national healthcare system is unlike other countries, we don't have a big database where it has all that stuff in it in one spot. In Australia, they did a study using healthcare data and found out that almost 24% of the minor children in the country of Australia have a parent who was involved with some kind of treatment for some kind of mental illness. So that typically, and if we know that mental illness affects 1 out of 4, 1 out of 5 people, and we know also that unlike what some folks think, the parenting rates for people with mental illness are similar to the parenting rates for anybody else. And although retaining custody sometimes is a separate issue, and that isn't always anybody's fault either. But what we know for sure is that Bill Beardsley was on a Blue Ribbon panel. I'm trying to think who put that one out. Of course, I can't remember it, but I if anybody contacts me, I'll look it up. Where they looked at, and they were looking at prevention of mental illness, and they just looked at adult patients who had been treated for major depression. That's one diagnosis, major depression. And there were something like 7 million children that came out of that database. And they used several large databases. So millions. Mental illness is everywhere, and people with mental illness have children. It's far greater numbers than most people would ever guess, especially if you throw in substance abuse, alcohol, drugs into the picture.
Okay. Well, can you tell me a little bit about this program that you've developed?
Sure. It's called Youth Education and Support. So it's YES. So the idea is exactly that youth do get information and they get support. But what we do, and we've run it a number of different ways. We've run at this point 13 completed groups over the last 5 or 6 years. And what we've done is we have developed the beginning of a manual. And we are currently working in one of the public schools in Lansing, Michigan area, which is a medium-sized city, and we I work with the school social worker and what they do is they ask kids if they're interested in being in the group, and they send information to teachers and they send information to parents, and they basically say, would you, you know, we're looking for people who have someone who has a mental illness or substance abuse disorder in their family that has regular interactions with a child who's in the 6th, 7th, or 8th grade, which is the where we've been running the program since we started, was middle school kids. So we bring together between 6 and 12 young people, boys and girls, from and one school we did 5th grade, then 6th grade, and the other group we did 7th and 8th grade. And then we kind of put them through kind of an activity-based program. So for we have, you know, we have games, we have artwork, we have, for example, when we talk about coping, we have the kids talk about the ways that, what works for them, what can they do when they're feeling stressed out that helps them to feel better. So I have one of them up in my office. So we make like a mobile. And we hang like brightly colored cards and pictures, and if say a kid said talk to someone, one side of the card said talk to someone, and the other side of the brightly little note card showed a picture of two people of a person talking to someone. So we hang all this together and we put it up with bright yarn, and they kind of do that together, and we come up. The idea is that these are the kinds of things that a person can do in order to manage their stress that will be likely to help them to feel more healthy and balanced. So we watch movies, clips, we have, you know, crossword puzzles, if the weather's good, we sometimes have basketball points for, you know, answering the questions. And what we've done is it's 10 currently in the school, and we've been blessed, truly blessed, that the school system has allowed us to come in during the school day, because one of the biggest factors we had for a long time was being able to access the children and have them come consistently. It was very difficult to manage it after school. But this works out okay, and of course the parents have consented to it. We would not do that unless they had. And so it's a 10-week program. The first one is kind of explaining what that's about and getting some information from kids. And the last one's like we have a graduation. And in between, we deal with topics like what is mental illness? And we particularly focus on depression and anxiety. We don't try to cover the whole range of all mental illnesses, but we particularly look at those. And a little bit about thought disorders. We introduce the idea, but we don't. It's not so much about diagnosis as it is about the giving people hope that, you know, having mental illness is not always great, but it can get a lot better for most people many times. And that there is, it does not mean that you can't have a good life, or that you can't work, or that you can't. We do things like I'm sure you will see this in other, we'll take those big lists of people with mental illness. And I had one kid, he was so funny. He was kind of a naughty little guy. But he got really into the program after we did this important people, you know, who are famous people with mental illness, because he said, what did he say? Drew Carey can't have a mental illness. He's always happy on The Price is Right. And that something about that just jogged something for him. And he was really into the program from that point on. And kids tend to be enthusiastic. I mean, we may have jocks and cheerleaders and all the layers, you know, of kids who are struggling, It doesn't matter. They come together for purposes of these groups, and they support each other. Now, to be clear, we do education and we do support, but this is not a treatment group, and we're very clear about that. If someone did get distressed by something or needed something more, we did have a backup system where they could get access to school social worker or even beyond that for some help. And some of them were already seeing someone. But for the most part, how the kids reacted is relief that there was a safe place to talk about it when there was no one to talk about it. And we'd say, well, you talk about this anywhere else? And they said, no, the only place we talk about this is here. And this is a place where we can, and we, you know, we had food, we had games, we had activities, but we were, really did have a purpose. We were testing, we used pre and post and follow-up. We were looking for to what extent the kids increased their knowledge of mental illness and recovery, to what extent they reported either using or resisting, I guess, pressures to use substances. And the other thing we looked at was to what extent their coping skills changed. And so we had a number of ways to collect data about what some of the outcomes were. And we also used what the kids themselves said, because every week they did a little write-up on, well, what went well today, what did you learn, what could make this better, what suggestions you have. And over the years, we have incorporated the suggestions from both parents and the kids to make the program stronger. But it does take quite some time to develop an evidence-based practice, especially when there aren't a lot of scales just or measures to just all ready to go just for that age population. So it has been. And in fact, we did receive a Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services grant from the federal government. It just wasn't a very large grant, but a little bit of grant and some technical assistance to work on strengthening the program. So an evidence-based practice would mean that we have sort of like a manual, you know, here's what you do to get the group going, here's the first time you meet, here's what you do, here's how much time you spend on each, here's what you need to bring. So it's, and then here's how we know that when other people put this group on, you followed the procedures, so in the training. So that's the kind of stuff we've been doing, and it's been tremendously rewarding. And our biggest promoters really have been the children that went through it. Some of them begged to come back. So that's what we've been doing in Michigan.
I wanted to get a little bit more into the mentioning of an evidence-based practice, because you know, this is one model, one program that's taking place in one little area of the country.
That's right.
You know, how do people learn about this? How do people, if they feel they want to replicate it, where would they start to look for information?
Well, that's a really good question. This particular program is, because it's not, we haven't finished our work, it's not, there are a number of websites where you can look up evidence-based practices for all kinds of things. There is one called Let's Talk that Bill Beardsley from Harvard and his research colleagues have done, and they've implemented that one in many countries of the world, Finland, Sweden, the Netherlands. And that particular one, they work with the family, particularly the parents, to have a sit-down talk with their kids about mental illness. And in some cases, they built it into the regular mental health system. Or in Finland, for example, they're trying to make it a part of the regular care. And that one, for example, if you were going to, you could look on one of the databases, and there are many. I'm trying to think. The national, there's one on the SAMHSA site itself, the National Evidence-Based Practice something, NENREP it's called. But if you were to Google evidence-based practice databases, there would be a bunch of them that would come up. And so you can go on there and research that. Now, ours is not on there yet or fixed, but if people were interested in doing that, the YES program, they would just need to call me and we can talk. It is my dream, really my dream, that whether it's this program or some other way, that all children could get information about mental illness, because I think that's how we could eliminate stigma in the first place, if people really understood, or at least decrease it. It's something that affects most of us, and it's not. They don't teach you about mental illness in healthcare class. That's another whole matter. But so, databases, contacting the people, and in the databases they'll describe the program and they'll say why they think it's evidence based. And some of them are more clear about that than others. And then there's contact information. What we do need to build also for the YES program is a website. We've not done that yet, but it's on our to-do list. So that would be, in the future, another way to find out about it.
Good. At this time, I'm going to invite people to call in.
Okay.
Our number to call in, if there's anyone out there, is 646-564-9557. Again, that's 646-564-9557. Another question I'd have is I'd really like to get an idea of, you know, the actual response that these young people have gotten from, you know, what kind of things have if you have, like, any kind of testimonials from those who've been through the program.
I do have stories, actually, but one of my favorites, and I gave this to the guy who was the head of SAMHSA. I wrote it on my card, but we had a young woman, we had a little thing at the end of the program that said, what, if any, difference has, you know, and we were very clear that it didn't have to make a difference. That was okay if it didn't, but what difference does this make in your life? And she wrote three words, I quit cutting. And cutting is a really hard thing to get a handle on, and I was really amazed, and it was a fabulous answer. Other things we've happened, we had in that school system, we had some visitors from where were they from? Finland. And they came to the school to talk to the school social worker that he also had a connection with the School of Social Work at Michigan State where we worked. And I wasn't present for this, but I heard about it. And one of the young men who had been in our program, a sixth grader, came and talked to the visitors. And he told them about the program. And they asked him what he learned. And he said, we learned that mental illness is not my fault, and it's not anyone's fault. And he said he was sort of an ambassador for the program, and nobody, you know, cued him in. Nobody told him what to say. I wasn't even there. But other things that I've seen come out of this is that, and we have not followed it long term, but we did see, some of the parents reported to us that the kids were behaving better. And I never expected anything like that. It was really just to give the kids information. They did report, we did have really strong findings in their knowledge with the instrument that we're using were they held up, and we were seeing some statistically significant improvement in knowledge. Not as much change in substance abuse and coping skills, so we had tried to lay that on a little heavier. But some of them said what did they like best about the program, making friends. Some of the kids lived a pretty isolated kind of a life, and this gave them something that you could talk about. And it was, everybody had that, so it's like you're not the only one who has this. There's other people out there that have this. So I would say that once we got kids in the program, what did we have last year? Last year we had 19 kids go through the program last year, and we only had one dropout. And that was an unfortunate situation where her parents were getting divorced, and one parent wanted her to go to the program, and the other one didn't. It became kind of something they were arguing about. And that little girl was so sad, came every week for the next 3 weeks trying to become, and we couldn't take her because at that point we didn't have a parent who was not supporting us, and we didn't have a clear, you know, parent in custody, so there was no way that we could take her when the parent was saying she can't go. So generally speaking, my point is that the kids stayed. The kids came, they participated, they talked. And we wrote down a lot of what they said because we had some people who were observing, with their permission, of course, who were checking to see to what extent we were implementing the model. But while they were at it, we also had them write down, well, what did kids say about mental illness? Which they didn't, when they first started, and invariably in every group that I've had, they think people with mental illness are in wheelchairs, they have seizures, they one of them said they slobber, one of them said they can't do anything, they can't think, they can't make good decisions, they just don't have any idea. And so what I say to them, one of the models we use is, okay, the next time you go to the shopping mall or the basketball game or you're in a crowd, I want you to look around and I want you to pick out one out of every five people, and that's who has mental illness, because people with mental illness. So what we did in some ways was try to make mental illness more, quote, normal, in that it's a health disorder that affects many, many people. And in fact, you know, as you know, is the number one source of disability in the world. So it's something that everybody should know about.
Next question, last story about, you know, support of parents. How supportive have parents been?
Pretty good, except for that one story that I just told you. In our program, the first session, for part of it, the parents are invited if they want to come, when we talk about what to expect in the program. And they also complete information for us and sign consent, all kinds of consents and but more so, we've had parents come to part of the last session when we have graduation, and the kinds of things we've gotten from parents have been, you know, it's basically kind of, it's about time we had something like this. And sometimes I wish they would have had this when I was a kid, and all kids should be getting this information. So parent, and also we had a parent advisory group. They didn't agree on all the time about how you give this, you know, whether you should have people shooting basketball or watching a movie. I mean, they didn't agree about how to deliver the message, but they were very keen that kids had to have accurate information. And we also worked with kids to have them make a commitment to not engage in stigma. And And the parents did talk about stigma being this really big problem, that they thought this kind of thing, this kind of program could, if folks had accurate information, that could really help. And then some of them would say things like, I wish I could bring my mother-in-law to this or something. So those were, or there's these other folks who could use this. So the kids have been very, very positive.
Okay, are there any questions I haven't asked that I should be asking?
I think I would say that there's probably a few comments I would make that I would hope that, I'm hoping that what my dream would be to have a way to have them teach about mental illness and recovery in the healthcare sequence in education all across everybody's educational experience, just the same as they teach them about, oh gosh, you know, bones and you know, we teach them about brains and I think that that's really important thing. Right now, I guess the future of the program is once we can get evidence based and we're getting closer, then what we will need is a home for this program. There isn't really any entity or group or organization that's taken ownership over teaching kids this kind of stuff. And then money to keep it going. It's not very expensive. It's a pretty reasonable program. It costs about $600 to $1,000 to deliver the whole program. And you even will end up with some materials that you can use for the next group by the time you're done. That of course, assumes that your leaders are volunteering. But basic materials, not that expensive.
So do you imagine that this will, you'll eventually develop like a curriculum that people could just,
yeah, I would love it. Yeah.
Take with them? And
I hope so. I really, and the other thing I would hope is that, you know, there's so many things. I mean, it would be nice. I mean, this is the kind of thing that could grow. I mean, it would be nice if the kids could have more of a role in, you know, like some that have graduated and maybe being like helpers with the group or something, high school kids. I mean, I'm thinking there are college kids coming in. I would love to see more of this kind of just giving people straight information. I'd like to see more media people involved. I have a lot of dreams about it. But just for now, just developing a program that seems to work and being able to show that it works, that's and be able to continue to deliver it and help it grow and begin to be done more across the country, that would be wonderful. And this program, but, you know, and ways to deliver the information.
I'm running out of questions.
Okay.
I'll check one more time to see if we've got anyone who wants to call in. Again, our number is 646-564-9557. I thank you for being for coming on, even though we did have some technical issues.
Not a problem. Yes, it's something that I really feel strongly about, and it's nice to have to talk to people who also care about the kids and their parents and their families. So it's kind of my very important to me, but really especially important to those families.
Okay. Thank you. Next week we'll be back. It'll be another group format discussion, and we'll take on one of the issues I think that was addressed here is the issue of stigma and prejudice.
Yeah, good.
From that daughter's son-child perspective, what it means, what are the messages out there in the community that you as a young person acquire and how that influences your perspective as you age. So we'll have a group discussion on that, and that'll be next week on the 20th. On the 27th, we have Susan Smiley as our guest. For those who don't know, Susan Smiley is the director producer of a documentary known as Out of the Shadow, which is about 10 years old, and we'll talk with her about the experience of producing that and events that have taken place since the movie has come out. But I guess that's it for tonight. I thank you again, and good night, everyone.
Good work, Joe. Thank you. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.